Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire. Jeff, could you maybe laugh just a little bit less? Come on, man.
Hello, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming. My chat today is with Jay Massey. He is over at Cash Flow Diary, and he is a house flipper. He's a real estate investor, entrepreneur, all-around fun guy to talk to. Jay was a military kid, so we talked a little bit about him and his military days. Well, not military days, military kid days, about him being basically on the move and moving all the time from kindergarten to 12th grade, all the way up until he graduated from high school. And we talk a lot about how he got into sales. We talk about how to define success and how being an entrepreneur is a great way to become, get into a personal development program. So without further ado, my chat, my convo, lots of laughing with Jay Massey of CashflowDiary.com.
Are you ready to thoughtfully steer away from your revved up, frenzied, and far too often scripted life? Then welcome to Vroom Vroom Veer with Jeff Smith, where he guides you down the road differently traveled by sharing unique experiences with guests who have managed to shift away from a life stuck on cruise control and veered their way into a more authentic and fulfilling one in all sorts of interesting and kind of remarkable ways. Get ready to vroom vroom veer with your differently traveled road chauffeur, Jeff Smith.
Mr. Jay Massey, welcome to Vroom Vroom Veer. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
I love your microphone and your whole studio setup there. Fellow podcaster. Always good to have a fellow podcaster because I know have to worry about your stuff.
Right. I was going to say, at least in that case, you know, if your recording goes bad, I probably got one too, and it's going to sound somewhat decent.
Yeah. Oh, you know, and I don't have to worry about your end. I mean, we're on video right now and I can see that you've got a quality microphone with a pop filter too. Good for you.
I try. One day I'll keep up with you guys and it'll be awesome.
No, you're there, dude. You're there. It wherever you're at, that's where you are. Okay. Let's look at Mr. Jay Massey's life from the lens of rooming and veering. And talk a little bit about some of your veers. So, and if you can, let's try to get some that you haven't talked about as much. Maybe when you were younger, you know, I know you've got the ones that you were homeless or you were like squatting in a house. I checked those out. Great stories. Yeah. I know you're a great storyteller. Sure. If you can dig a little deeper or, you know,
wow.
Yeah. You know, this is a self-help show. So
start at
the surface level and then, you know, I'm going to be listening for drill downs.
Sure. Well, one of the things that comes to mind and when I'm thinking about, you know, the veers is I was trained early and I consider it training because I grew up as a military kid. You're Air Force?
Yeah, I'm retired Air Force.
Oh, thank you for your service very much.
Because you served while you were a kid.
That's true. So we mostly Army as well as Air Force. But what it was is there's a training period. All entrepreneurs are going to go through it at some way, level, shape, or form. I just got it early in that by growing up military, you literally, it was a reality where anywhere from 6 months to 3 years, you could be moving and you did not know and you didn't always get a ton of notice. I can remember coming home on a Friday thinking I had a weekend going, yay, weekend. And they're like, hey, we're moving. I'm like, what do you mean we're moving? And moving meant soon. It wasn't like months out. It was, hey, guess what? Movers are going to be here in a couple of days and we're moving. And I'm like, oh, here we go again.
Wow.
You know, so there's lots of that. And between kindergarten and 12th grade, I went to 14 different schools, which doesn't do
military
wonders for. Yeah, totally. And you got to understand it's different people, different countries, different.
That is super jarring to everything. A kid, though.
Exactly. Well, there's a double-edged sword to it. So on one end, yeah, it kind of makes relationships challenging, to say this, say the least. Long-term relationships, good luck. But you get an experience that most other people just don't get. I've seen things, you know, there are many people who, you know, unless you were born there, you don't know what Eastern Europe was. In fact, when I say Eastern Europe, you're like, what is that? Because there was a West Germany and then East Germany. Yeah.
That's all the stands.
But no one knows. Right, you know, you don't know what that was. You, in having that experience and growing up where like architecture and things of that nature are, that are my school field trips were completely different.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't go to Six Flags. We didn't go to Disney World. Right. And it wasn't anything like that. It was, hey, let's go to King Ludwig's castle. You know, we just read about it.
Cool, or let's, is that? Right.
It was, hey, the Diary of Anne Frank. Let's read the book and then go there. And that's what we did. And that was normal for us. And that's one of those things that wakes you. For example, when I came back to the U.S., you want to talk about a culture shock.
Oh, I had that. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. When I was 18, I joined the military and then went to Japan for 2 years. So
okay,
I experienced that firsthand. So super culture shock. And then I went from Japan to Hawaii and then went to Florida. And I grew up in Michigan. So yeah, you know, it's actually... Sometimes rooming is cool because you're experiencing life on fast forward. It's just a little difficult to keep up with. So I can relate.
Well, and that was the thing, was the thing that causes me to call this the veer side, is I finally that stopped. And I try to go to one, you know, college for a specific period of time. And I'm just like, yeah, I got antsy. It was weird. It's like I can't sit, and I'm still in the same city.
Yeah,
this is not normal.
You got kind of addicted to wanderlust a little bit,
right? It's just like, hey, is it time to move?
You were raised a nomad, basically. And my wife and I are still going through that. We're going through wanderlust withdrawal because I retired in 2008. We had been here since 2003. So I've lived in LA longer than I've ever lived anywhere else, it seemed like, other than where I grew up.
Well, so I am now, and the funny thing is today with my wife, she's born in Long Beach and I transplant to Orange County, obviously. So, and I've been now in Orange County since 98. So therefore, I've been here longer than anywhere else, including, I can't really say including where I grew up, because I grew up everywhere, right? So I've been here the absolute longest, and now I don't want to go. And she's the one like, hey, can we go somewhere? Can we move? Because I'm like, what? I've been everywhere. Have you seen the weather? Are you kidding me? The whole point is...
My wife and I are having the same discussion. It's great. It's like, whenever we look at some new place to go, we think, why? Yeah. We're already in Southern California. You cannot beat the weather, you know?
Yeah, the major thing is just learning that, to develop that elasticity inside yourself. And that's not something that most humans, that's not something we do well. You know, we are creatures of habit. We like the same bowl of cereal with the, you know, same bowl, same milk, same spoon. Talk to any one of my kids. If I don't give them the Mickey Mouse plate, we are in trouble. And it has to be the exact same blanket every night.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that's especially important for kids too, I think.
Incredible. Trust me, I will make sure that blanket is in her bed tonight. You have no idea. It's a bad night if that blanket's not there.
Yeah.
But we grow up that way, and learning to make those adjustments as required, you know, for business or life or your situations is, oh man, that's a skill set.
It is
not taught.
Actually, you know, I think you and I, it's what I like to call a blurse. It's a combination blessing curse. It's a blurse because there's good sides and bad sides to it. It's really, really shocking. And in the moment, it's distressing. But in the long term, you're building resilience.
Yeah, if you can adapt.
Yeah, so it builds that resilience. And I think the frequency that we move from vroom vroom to veer, because you really can't avoid it. I mean, for the context and the metaphor of the show, I kind of like highlight veer as better than vroom vroom, but you really, it's the transition is that is the key, and learning to live in the liminal space between the two. And, you know, like you were saying, you're building up your sort of like change muscle.
Yeah. It's definitely a muscle. You got to work hard at it. I mean, it's something that's required for, you know, if anyone is like me, we crave this. I want it to be smooth sailing. But smooth sailing is this illusion that we rarely ever get to. And we have to find other ways to adapt and balance. I mean, soon, especially once you have a kid, once you get married, once you think you're going to own a business, you might as well just toss your schedule out the window. It's like, why bother to some degree? But at the same time, you've got to learn how to adjust between the two things. It's the best personal development program I'm aware of is to start a business, period.
I agree with that. Because
it will force you. I mean, it will also increase your religious beliefs, because you'll start praying in so many ways, because you've got no choice.
You've got to figure it out. Podcast was all about the entrepreneurial journey. And I realized that the entrepreneurial journey is as much a spiritual journey as any other thing, any other creative expression that humans can do. You know, it really is, because you're facing fears every day. You know, you're facing doubt every day, and it's all
every day, every
on
hour.
You, you know, it's all on you. But I want to get back to another thing that you said too, because
sure.
When we're kids, you know, what that blanket and everything being the same is really, really touching on our primary need for certainty. And even adults need a certain level of certainty in their lives. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, if you get too much certainty, then you get bored.
Well, some of us get bored. Some of us rebel. But others of us are absolutely addicted to the certainty, and we don't care. That's why so many people stick with their jobs or paychecks. I mean, if you want to, on my show, I had Josh and Lisa Lana, one of the Rich Dad Advisors, and he likened money or our paychecks to a drug, in that if we for some reason don't get it when we expected, we go through these withdrawal symptoms, et cetera, and I'm just like, wow, never thought of it that way. But it's very, very true for a number of individuals. If that paycheck, I can't operate if, you know, that wire transfer, that direct deposit, it's supposed to be here 8 a.m. by Friday. It's 8:05. What's going on?
Right.
I can't. And then they can't think past that, and then but yet they end up in this torturous state where what they want is something that is, they want control over their time, and they want to be able to have more flexibility and freedom of choices. Well, okay, you can have those, but those come with a certain level of unpredictability, whatever the word is, and you've got to do that. And but yet at the same time, you don't realize you can have the predictability if you are predictable. And that's the major difference with most entrepreneurs and businesses, is that you got to realize, if you say, well, I want a steady paycheck. Well, the best way to have a steady paycheck is for you to be steadily doing the work that creates a steady paycheck, so to speak.
Right.
And if you're not doing that work, you shouldn't expect one. But that craving for, you know, consistency and stability, it's totally there. And we need certainty in various different ways, and you have to find that source. Otherwise, you're in trouble.
So true. Well, what I was going to follow that up with was, to me, with too much certainty, I get bored. So I
want
to have, and I think,
me too.
And especially growing up, as you know, you did as a kid, and then me from 18 to 38 in the military.
Right.
You actually are building up a desire for more, a little bit more uncertainty than the civilian population.
Hey, right. What's he doing this week? Yeah, totally. Totally understood. I agree with you 1,000%. I mean, that was one of my issues with my real estate business, is there are certain parts of it that I'm just not good at, which is fine. And you hire people you put people in positions to do the job. So therefore, there comes a point at which your job, my job, my primary role for a long time was acquisitions and negotiations of the transactions. And once the building was purchased, we, you know, I turn it over to the team.
Right.
And then I'm done. And I'm just like, cool, now I've got nothing to do. Well, I would go out and, because I was bored, go buy another building. But they're not done with the last one. And then it got to this point, it was like, okay, I can't buy anymore, so what am I going to do? And I was just bored because I was waiting. I'm just like, this is horrible.
Yeah, yeah. There's that lag time of escrow, right?
man, I don't even go there.
That's the bane of your existence. That. Yes, okay.
It's like, are we done yet?
Right,
yeah,
right.
No, it kills. It's like, it just does not fit my personality. So I had to find other ways without causing them more stress. I had to find other ways to release that energy and to be productive.
Right. That makes sense. Good for you. I mean, I think you learned a key lesson pretty early on, I hope. That one that you're hiring out to people that are experts and do their thing probably better than you, one would hope.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good idea. The other thing that I noticed was when you're an entrepreneur and you hire somebody, it's like this weird paradox of relationship that's like similar to trying to please a boss, except you hired them. And now you know, I hired a team. It was like a branding engagement to come up with the concept of this new podcast. And I was very much treating them like my bosses, you know, going back to when I still had my job, you know, I was trying to please them and, you know, because I knew that they were way smarter than me at this stuff. And if I, you know, went and did what I thought was a good idea, then I would be wrong.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. And that's it's always a delicate balance or dance, if you will, to figure out what that mix needs to be. And again, more personal development, interpersonal skills is where it lies, but also understanding intrapersonal skills at the same time so that you have the ability to move your objectives and mission forward. I was gifted with, like I said, I tell people this all the time. I have a PhD, public high school diploma. So I know that I don't know. Right. We're in the PhD club right now.
Yeah.
We should start a club right there. There's the new podcast, the PhD club. Anyway.
The other PhD club.
Right.
There you go.
So and because of that, I knew that I didn't know stuff and I was okay with that. And I chose, I purposely stayed ignorant on some topics. You know, just because it benefited the business.
There's and only so much like, room in your brain anyway.
I know. And I've got four kids, so it's getting really full up in there. you know, just trying to remember their names. You, that one, stop. That's hard
enough. The one making noise annoying me. Stop it.
There you go. I'm going to have to edit that out of the podcast. Be quiet. Yeah, that one.
Right.
All the time. So when you're going through, you know, those things that we go through as entrepreneurs, is just something to it helps you to realize that a really good way to be is to strive to be the dumbest person in the room. That doesn't mean you don't know anything.
Right. No,
but it means I tried, but that is my goal. It's like I don't want to know more than you about the thing you're supposed to be responsible for. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not going to know about what you're responsible for. I just don't want to know more than you. Because then, therefore, it means I have to have the answer. And then that's a problem.
Right.
Because I don't have it all the time.
Well, no. And then it gives you this like weird situation where then, you know, if you're not hiring somebody smarter than you, then you shouldn't hire them. You know, that then you.
Correct.
So you have to face that, you know, that, oh, crap, I screwed up.
More than once.
Yeah.
More than once.
Yeah. That's got to be a beer situation, right?
I can only tell you how many frogs I've kissed on the way to the prince and princesses that now work with us to make things happen. I mean, you're going there, and that's the other thing. You don't even think about, oh, how can I avoid? What is the 10-step method to make sure you never hire the wrong person? Notice there is
hire 10 people.
Yeah, right. Hire 10 people, fire 9, and you're left with the one you wanted.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Ta-da.
Hire slow, fire fast.
Yeah, I've heard that one. My CFO has told me that one. It's almost embarrassing how many times she's had to say that.
It's amazing like how much people put into the hiring process, you know?
Right.
And I just let's see here. I can't remember his name. I want to say his name's Matt, and he is he's the owner of WordPress, and then the commercial version of WordPress. So it's a big company now. They're actually making money now. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was just talking forever about his hiring process, and right. with Tim Ferriss on his podcast, and I was like just right. amazed. I was like, wow, mm-hmm. because you know he had no clue how to do it either, right? And he realized that nobody did. That was the amazing thing. And you're going, duh.
Yep. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. It's like the stock market. Anybody who tells you different is lying and wants to sell you something.
it's like it's not gonna happen. That's the whole another thing is when you're talking about, you know, veers that need to be made, you've got to disassociate from the things that you think you know. One of the most dangerous things every entrepreneur can do is to assume, I know my customer. Oh, I know my market. Oh, I know
Amen.
How this
oh, business. Thank you.
I know.
Oh, yes.
It is absolutely business death to go, I know. I mean, I've heard it said the three most dangerous words in the English language are, I know that. I already know that.
You do?
I already know that.
right.
You're like, no, you don't. You need to stay open because people change, your market changes, your business is changing. It's changing right now as you're listening to us.
Right.
It is not going to be the same. You shouldn't be the same. All of these things are in a constant state of flux, and your abilities keep up with the rate of change. I mean, the volume of content and the quality of content and the consistency of content that's being created these days is absolutely ginormous. I mean, I read somewhere that every day there's like 300 years of videos uploaded to YouTube every day.
What?
I'm like, okay,
say that again.
On.
Say that.
What?
Back that up. 300 yeah, exactly. years.
300 years of video is being uploaded to YouTube
every day.
That's like, okay, hold on. So you're saying I'll never get through YouTube? No, that's exactly what I'm saying because there's a lot of stuff.
That goes to like now the new role of a content marketer is part curator.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to, you don't necessarily have to even. You just got to become a great curator to some degree because somebody probably already created it and they just don't know how to market it. But that's a whole nother topic for another day. But the point is there's so much content. There's so much to know. There's so much to learn and there's so many nuances to it. You can't if you refuse to evolve past me and I can only trust me and I can do it myself or you can consciously choose. I just wanted people to avoid those states of insanity and confusion.
Yes.
That they're like, hey, I'm the best resource and I want to have a big business. Well, if you're going to be the system, your business by default is limited. You have a limitation that just it's very, very difficult to overcome. I'm not saying it can't be overcome. I mean, it's just very difficult to overcome. Can you do seven figures as a solopreneur? Sure. But that's going to it's going to take some additional technology and help to make that happen. But there are easier ways to get to that seven figure number.
Yeah, and the solopreneur is, I think, kind of a misnomer because most solopreneurs are outsourcing to the point where, as far as the IRS is concerned, those guys are just as good as employees. They're outsourcing a lot of work.
Right.
But I get it. I think it's you know, you just think it's just one dude in his house and he's making, you know, six figures in a month. That's pretty rare. You know, that's pretty rare,
right.
You know.
Right.
You know, the one example, John Lee Dumas, he's not one guy.
Sure.
Hasn't been for a long time. Actually, he didn't start out as one guy. Everybody forgets about Kate, and Kate is amazing.
We're all gifted with certain things that we just can't do. And I said gifted with things we can't do. That was used perfectly and on purpose, because that gives us then the need to learn to communicate and work with others. Because for example, if you want your picture on your wall hung correctly, do not call me, because I've been gifted with the inability to do stuff like that. Don't ask me to go to Home Depot. I can't go to Lowe's. And you're like, how does this guy do $1 million rehabs if he can't go to Home Depot and Lowe's? It's because I've got a team that's awesome. It's not just me. And we all can lend our unique skill sets in various different ways.
Yeah. So let's rewind again and let's talk a little bit more about you and your story, because I love those stories.
Go for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, so you grew up as an Army brat. And then you moved to, where did you move to first? Southern California? What was your first move after you finished your high school career?
It was Tennessee, Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, nice. Okay. So Memphis, talk a little Tennessee. Bit about what you were doing like immediately after, right? Like from 18 to 25, what was Jay Massey's life?
Jay Massey's life was primarily, I got, and you wanted things that just take you in a completely different path. I thought I was going to go at least try to walk on my college basketball team. That was my thought process. But I got injured that summer. And lost a significant portion of my left calf muscle in a kitchen accident. And that put me in the hospital for what would have been the fall semester. And I had to, you know, I spent a ton of time in the bed and hospital and rehab, burn unit, blah, blah, blah. First, second, third degree burns, skin grafts.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a veer.
Yeah. There you go.
That's the definition of a veer right there.
Whee! Yeah, I mean, if. Right. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if I know this is pretty, it's pretty insane to think about, but there was a part where you could literally see the bone in my leg without an X-ray. You could see it. It was, dude, we're talking really bad burn. Okay.
Ew.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wait a minute. I'm going to do it a little bit more like Jimmy Fallon. Ew.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Ew.
So,
all right.
Go on. It is definitely all of that and more. So, that put me in this position to where I ended up in Memphis. I thought I was going to be a double major in electrical engineering and computer engineering technology. Realized that was way too consistent and boring. Did not want to do it. So I believe it or not, I started acting and modeling. That was the idea. That was my thought process. I was that guy that did not show up to class, but somehow still managed to pass the test because school was boring and I was looking for something else to do. But I did show up to basketball class. That I did show
basketball
up to.
Class. There was a class.
There was
for
a basketball.
That's
I
awesome,
know, man. It was awesome. Tell me about it. Tell me about it. That was a great thing. But it took me a long time, a number of years to figure out I should have never been in college. That's why I dropped out. I should have never been trying to be an employee. I didn't know. And it took me years to figure out. So 18 to 25 was Jay figuring out that he shouldn't have been in college. Then I moved out to California. My oldest daughter was born right when I was 21, and so we moved out to California, and then that's when I started just trying to do customer service jobs. I worked on the phone a lot, and a ton, and I didn't realize that I was actually pretty good at working on the phone, and that actually trained me to listen, which is one of the necessary skills of an entrepreneur, especially if you've got to sell anything. It just trained me to listen because, you know, you pick up the phone. If you can imagine this, for those of you who have ever called a tech support, like, you know, Microsoft or internet service provider or whatever, you've ever called tech support and you're actually trying to get help. I was that guy on the other end of the phone. I'm sorry. I didn't have a personality back then. It is what it is. But that's what I did, you know, and that what happened is one day, my supervisor heard me on the phone and he goes, "We want to put you in sales." And man, I went purple. I mean, for those of you can't see me, I'm African American. So I lost all the blood in my hand. It was not cool. My hands were I'm stark, cold, clammy, scared. Like, oh my God, here comes more inconsistency and unpredictability. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm like, we're going to die tomorrow if I don't sell anything. I remember those first calls and it was nuts. It was just not, it was not pretty. It was not cute under any circumstances whatsoever. Obviously we got through it, but the point is that was the beginning of me becoming a different person that I needed to be to begin with so that my genius could come out. Had I not made that decision, who knows, you know, to actually follow his suggestion. And it was just inbound sales at that. I didn't even have to talk. I didn't have to call people. I didn't have to forcibly call people. I was just waiting for people to call me and I was freaking out.
So basically you were doing the order taking version of the sales.
Exactly.
They've already been converted and you're saying, yes, yeah. Would you like that in blue or pink?
Correct. It's funny that you say blue or pink, because this was right when the iMac, for those of you who can remember, when they first came out, and most importantly, when they first came out with colors. God, you want to talk about what drove me nuts. Mind you, I was electrical engineering, computer engineering guy, and then here come computers and colors, and here now I'm dealing with customers. I'm trying to make a sale, and they're like, do you have the blue one? I'm like, no, but we got the orange one. Why don't you take the orange one? And then I would hear things like, well, it doesn't match my curtains. And I'm like, okay, hold on. It's a computer. It doesn't matter if it matches. This is what I'm thinking in my head. So
right.
I'm not going to. Are you telling me I'm not going to eat because you want a blue one and I got an orange one? Oh, my God. What is this coming to? It's a computer. You don't care what color it is. Anyway.
It's a fashion accessory. Get with the program.
Clearly, someone could have told me. But, so it was. It's been an evolutionary process in that sense. It was a stepping stone that led to a stepping stone. And one of my mentors always says, go as far as you can see. And when you get there, you'll see further.
I love that. That's great. So let me dial back just a little bit and drill down. Sure. When you were doing the just answering the phone and doing customer support.
Sure.
No. First off, I want to comment on, I try to be as charming as hell whenever I'm talking to customer support, because I know they're abused all day. So I do my best to be human and nice and personable and try to brighten their day a little. And I never, ever, ever, ever have problems with customer support. You could say I'm really sucking up. That's what I'm doing.
Sure.
I'm trying to suck up to that guy that's making less than minimum wage or whatever. You know, I am trying to A, brighten his day, and B, get like really good customer service. It always works.
Right.
Experiment with that.
Right. Experiment. Right. Go for it.
Right. The other lesson that I was going to try to grab out of you was, yes, that job sucked, but I bet you learned just a lot about interacting with people. And that's what led to, I mean, they didn't just randomly say, oh, this guy should be in sales. They were listening to you interact with people, and you were getting good at it. Am I wrong?
No, that was exactly right. I just didn't know. I just didn't realize that that was also sales. That was the thing. I was just like, no, I'm just a customer service person. You know, this goes back to, you know, how you're thinking about you, or how we view ourselves is not often how we actually are. You know, in various different ways. They saw, here's a guy that can help us acquire more customers. And I'm like, no, where I belong is right here, just helping the people that are already here that just have a problem. I can do that all day long because there was, quote unquote, no risk. There was no performance check, so to speak. It's like I knew that all I had to do was this and everything was fine, status quo. Mm-hmm. But they saw more. And oftentimes when we receive that call, if you will, for more, we, you know, fight or flight, respond to it or not. And I, you know, it's one of those things where I've learned to respond to it in the yes form. I mean, and it sounds crazy, especially, it just sounds crazy. You know, oftentimes I have said yes to things that I didn't know how to do and I figured it out on the way there. And it seems to work out.
That's great. No, that's great. I had this conversation a couple of times already of successful people that kind of have that entrepreneurial vision, and they start tuning their muscle to see opportunities that have a big must do exclamation point on them, you know, and your radar for those becomes more attuned. And when you see them, you're like, clear my calendar.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Right. It's like, I have to do X. And because you know, in your brain, your big brain, you know, not just the little one that's, you know, trying to figure out how to hang a picture, but the whole thing, you know, the whole big brain that is everything that makes you amazing sees it. And then for whatever reason, the magic happens. You go, oh shit, that's the thing.
Right? I gotta move.
It's go time. Right, right. It's go time.
Yeah, and if you're not used to responding to that or even having the
well, you have to develop it as a skill. Yeah.
Yeah, it's something that
you're programming
that happens with smaller stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Because it's not, I don't know that it's innate. I know that it's learned, and we all can learn it in various different forms. And sometimes some of you out there, you're probably fortunate enough to actually learn it from mom and dad. Great. Others of us, we got to struggle and work through it and go, okay, maybe this is it, and fall on our faces a whole lot of times with no one to clean up our, you know, skint knees and elbows. And that's pretty much what it comes down to.
Yeah. I'm down with that. You know, I want to get your opinion on this whole fail fast, fail often sort of thing, because on the one hand, I like it. But on the other hand, I think it's getting a little oversold. I'm getting it. I like it because I totally respect the idea of just the faster, like if you are a total novice at anything, the fastest way to get off a novice is just to fail fast. Okay.
Yes.
I'm just saying, don't apply that at every level of your life. I mean, don't program yourself to say failure is required. You know, in the micro level, I think if you're skill building, yes. But you can't say, okay, well, this is only my third business. This one will fail too. Exactly. That's why I think I had the programming of, oh, this is my first business. It's doomed to fail anyway. I might as well fail fast. You will fail.
You will fail
with that attitude because you've programmed yourself to fail.
Well, again, first of all, you don't fail till you quit. Failure is an event, not a person. It is.
That's quotable.
And so, thank you. The fail fast, fail forward, and fail frequently is all about understanding that on the way to achieving success, whatever you define that is, you will have failure events. All I'm saying is get them done over with quickly. Most people don't fail fast, meaning they experience a failure event and what happens is they perceive that there's the possibility of a failure event. So what they want to do is they try to reverse engineer out all of the risk before they get started. They want to keep doing due diligence. They want to read 12 more books. They want to take 15 more classes before they take the first step. I'm like, dude, take the first step. Because I deal with this when I'm training new investors on how to buy property and whatnot. They're always like, I'm like, just write the offer. They're like, but I don't know what color the wood is and where it came from. Though it doesn't matter. Write the offer. But what about the utility bills? It doesn't write the offer. That's really what I'm trying to get them to do.
Right.
But they won't fail fast. They want to get all of that research. And I see it happen all the time in our group sessions where someone inevitably they're like, no, I got a better way. I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to go get all the research first. Then I'm going to write the offer. And by the time they've gotten all the research first, and then the deal is gone. And they're like, man, I did all that. And now it's gone. How am I ever going to be able to make this work? Well, next time you're going to write the offer long before you do all that work. And they don't fail fast. But and then the other person's, we don't fail forward. We have a failure event and we go, oh my God, that hurt. You know what? I'm going to go try skydiving instead because that hurt. I'm not going over there ever again. Right. Skydiving has got to be the thing that's for me. And then we have a failure event. It's skydiving. Well, you usually get one of those. But you have a failure event in the new area and you go, you know what? That hurt. And I don't want to ever have a failure event like that again. So I know what I'll do. I'll go try motorcycle riding. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
We keep experiencing these failure events and we don't fail forward. We fail backwards and we don't pursue through persevere through that particular failure, and then we don't fail frequently. What happens is we if you're riding a bike or learning any skill, you try it today, you have a failure event. So you say, okay, you know what? I'm going to persevere through this. But you don't get back on the horse for 2 months. Okay, that's a problem. You're not doing it quickly enough. You've got to collapse that time frame.
Yeah.
You're never going to learn the skill.
Yeah,
you know?
I like to think of a baby trying to learn how to walk.
Exactly.
You know, a baby doesn't like fall down. Like on the third try, they fall down and then they go, oh, well, I guess walking's just not for me.
Exactly. I'm done. No walking. I have made the decision. It hurt. I will only scoot. That is my now. I'm just scooting for the rest of my life.
Crawling's pretty damn cool. You know, crawling.
Totally.
You know, I'm a crawler. You know, yes. Me, I'm a crawler. You know,
I'm just a crawler.
I see all those that walkers, but me, you know, I'm a crawler. And I'm a really good scooter.
I tried that seminar. Yep. I tried that seminar. It didn't work. My friend got hurt trying to walk, and you know what? He got hurt so bad. I think crawling is a safe way to go. That's what my advisor says. They say I should crawl because crawling is safer. Less people trip. You can't fall. You don't even have to worry about shoes.
And then and it doesn't hurt because you're already down there.
Exactly. I mean, man.
We really did milk that one. No, it was awesome.
But we've got to learn. We've got to learn to fail forward, fail fast, and fail frequently. And the challenge is that means we have to unlearn everything we did learn.
Yeah, it's almost you have to reframe those as not failures. They're experiments.
Very much so.
They're results.
And you're always going to get it.
You can't get a result without, you know, following the steps. So,
well, that's the good news. You're going to get a result.
You will get
a result. The question is it the result?
But you have to follow the steps. That's what I'm saying.
You got to do something.
You have to recharacterize any result as success.
Indeed. Even if that meant, hey, I woke up today and I remembered to brush my teeth, I am therefore successful.
No,
if that's
what
all
I'm saying is
I'm good.
Just say, okay, you will be successful if you write this offer.
I got it. But sometimes before we get to writing the offer, we've got to, because that's what I had to do. I had to start with simple things like, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
I made it to the office today. I'm successful. Yay. That was enough.
Yeah.
And then
Let me get a 3x5 card and write it down and then cross it out.
I know.
Then I get a little dopamine.
I can check something off. Totally. I can check it off. Dude, we have been to the same stuff.
Yes.
It's like that stuff works. It's just funny.
It does.
But at the same time, one of the greatest tragedies, I think, is that we lack a very fundamental skill set. And that skill set is learning how to fail. There is a way how to fail. Now, if you are an athlete and you're listening, or especially pro athletes, you guys know how to fail. You failed miserably time and time again. You know how to fail, get back up. You know how to get yelled at and get back up. You know how to
drop the ball, miss the pass. Right.
Yeah, and get right back up and perform again.
Yeah.
You guys
it's called
learned
getting
it.
Out
you
of your own
that.
Way.
Yeah, but most of us didn't make it to, say, collegiate or pro level sports, and therefore we didn't fail enough, and we didn't learn how to deal with ourselves and our emotions and the tricks that our mind plays on us. We didn't learn that skill set. And then we go, hey, I know I'll be an entrepreneur. Hey, I'll know I'll be a dad. Hey, I'll know I'll be a husband. Hey, I'll know I'll be a whatever. And then we start experiencing failure events and going, what is this? This is not what I signed up for.
Right.
I'm like, no, it is what you signed up for. This is just part of the package, and you've got to learn how to deal with those things.
Let me ask you, are you a meditator?
Yes, I pray, but similar
okay.
concept.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, I can actually pick people out now that are or aren't, and you kind of have that vibe. yeah.
In fact, just before this podcast, because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to say or we're going to talk about, but that's okay. It'll be good.
You just stay present, right? And you were cool.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Right.
That is literally what I'm doing.
As I was doing my morning walking meditation out along the coast down by the harbor in San Pedro on Fort Mac, it's beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful morning, beautiful sun, and I'm doing my walking meditation. And I start having this little conversation with myself about how meditation isn't for meditation's sake. You pray, and I occasionally do my walking meditation or sitting meditation. that time is like a workout that is intended to flow into my waking state and sure. And add attention points or attention slots.
Yes.
If you got that right. Right. It's and I had this visualization of a video game like The Sims, where okay. your character in the game has so many slots for things to pay attention to. Just like we do, you know? So you start the game with four. You know, I can pay attention to a TV show and my foot and my wife talking to me and the baby crying, and anything else is outside my attention.
Got it.
Meditation is to add more slots.
Yeah, I get you. I like that. Yeah, it's definitely time to set the intention and figure out what it is that you're going to get done. To find those minimum activities that are required for you to feel successful during that day. You know, whatever that is, there isn't, you know, I think so much around the word success, we make things mean things that they don't actually mean. We forget
that, we're constantly being programmed too about chasing things that aren't really going to make you happy. That was one of those things that I kind of ran into. You know, that they call that the hedonistic treadmill, chasing after things outside of you.
Right.
And thinking, oh, well, if I just have a more sexy wife, or if I just have more sex or more money or a nicer car, then I'll be happy.
Yeah, no, that's a tyrant. To say the least, that's a horrible master, definitely a tyrant. What it comes down to is the cool thing is, though, is when you realize, like, where is it? I actually have a copy right here. Okay. Greg McEwen, The Essentialism I like the subtitle, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. The Disciplined Pursuit of Less.
Oh, we're putting that in the show notes just because I
there you go. Not even my book, but there you go. It's yours. That's go okay. for it. The point is, the idea is, you know, in a lot of cases, is to understand most of us don't feel successful, in my opinion, because we haven't defined what that would actually mean to us. We don't even know what that looks like. And we let something else outside of us determine what that is, usually society or peer groups, et cetera. And as soon as I have the purse she's got, and if I could wear the dress, and if I could take the vacations they can take, and if I can do what they can do, then I am. And that's the wrong order. It needs to be, I am because, you know, I'm healthy, wealthy, wise, alive. I've got all, there's so many more things that we do have. I mean, the average American in person probably listening to my voice right now, if you own an Apple product, you are probably in the top 1-2% of the world's population in terms of wealth. And it sounds crazy, but it's true.
It's true.
Period.
Yeah.
You own an Apple product. I don't even care if you've got the original iPhone or iPod. you're still in the top 1-2%.
Yeah.
You just are.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. And we lose sight of that because, and again, this comes back from growing up overseas. And I actually got a chance to recently to go back to Estonia and Lithuania. And just be reminded of these things is the world doesn't live the same way that we're used to. And you've got to just understand that we were very, very hyper fortunate individuals. You had no control over what country you were born in, what family you were born into. Now you've got all the control over what happens with you now that you're here, in a sense, to make different cards and things happen for yourself. But the point is we can do with significantly less than what we have at any given time. And having had the privilege of sleeping in my car and squatting in bank-owned property and being without my own residence more than once in my life, it has taught me that, you know what? I don't necessarily need, you know, the newest gadgets and toys every day.
Need is a really strong word.
Exactly. I don't need. I may want them, which is worse because that's the problem. We tend to go for the things we want more than the ones we need because we all know we should be doing an apple a day because it keeps the doctor away. But I won't dare ask you to raise your hand if you had an apple today because we know
we're just gonna. I'm doing the 4-hour body, so I can only have fruit once a week. So
Well, you're doing something.
Yeah.
And you're doing it with intent.
There you go. Know? There you go.
That's kind of my point.
Yeah. Yeah.
The point is we could do with significantly less than what we currently have, but it doesn't feel that way. And that's where the crux is.
I love the message of, you know, if you get your basic needs taken care of, then you win money. You know, if you learn that lesson that you just said, that you can really get by with, you know, food, water, shelter. You know, humans are essentially mammals, and they eat, sleep, procreate, and defecate. Everything else is just fluff.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe not necessarily in that order all the time, but yes.
Yeah, right? You know? And you know, if you're out in the woods and you're cold and hungry and wet, and somebody brings you inside, puts you by a fire, gives you a blanket and a bowl of soup, you're going to be massively more happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Please. Because I should never be in the woods, and I don't like being cold, and I really can't stand rain. So, yeah, that would all three of those things going away would make me happy.
Right. Yep. But after that, you know, you're not, you know, then, you know, there's this illusion that more comfort, more crap is going to make you, you know, more happy. Yep. And that's just a lie.
Nope. You are absolutely correct. So I'm going to take this to mean you're not getting an Apple Watch.
Actually, I'm kind of one of these guys that hangs on to things way too long. I have a television that's made out of a tube, and I bought it in 1988, and it still works. And I still use it, like, you know, maybe not every day.
Did you say 1988? I just want to make sure. Okay, got it. Do you realize there are people probably younger? There are people the same age or younger listening, right?
Yeah. And it still works. It still works. And I'm not ashamed. It's that's my bedroom TV. So here I am. You brought up an Apple product. My iPod Touch is, I think it's fourth generation. I think. And it won't take the latest iOS upgrade unless I get new hardware. So I've been hanging on to that too long.
We are now at, you're going to upgrade or not?
Well,
or just,
I don't know. I don't even know if I need an iPod Touch anymore is the thing is, you know, I don't know if I'll upgrade. I'm going to get another smartphone. I'll upgrade the whole reason that I got the iPod Touch to begin with was, at that time I had a dumb phone. I was a dumb phone the iPod Touch. So why upgrade?
Oh, so do you have an iPhone then?
No, I have a Galaxy S3. Okay. And I know they're up to fives. Don't worry about it.
Now you're killing me. Okay, cool. So, you got Stitcher Radio, so it's no big deal. You can still listen to your podcast.
I can do everything I need to do on that S3.
Doesn't sound like you need an iPod Touch.
Whatever.
Maybe give it to a kid.
I'm going to keep the old one until it literally quits working.
Well, it's Apple. It's not going to quit working, right? That's what it does. It works forever.
I still have a second generation Nano that I occasionally use too.
I bet you there's somebody somewhere that probably has like the original Apple IIe or something somewhere that actually still works. They probably have found a way.
Apple IIe. Yeah. I had
that was a long time
ago. I never had one of those, but there was an Apple IIc, and then there was that Apple, the Macintosh, that was all one thing, and it had a black
the
and
first
white all-in-one. Screen. Macintosh.
Yeah. Like an 8-inch screen or something. Yeah, I remember that one.
I used one of those in high school to make really cool drawing.
And now, you programmed the turtle to go in a square, and you're like, ooh, that was awesome. I'm hot stuff.
My computer geek moment was I programmed a Timex Sinclair 1000, which was like this mini little computer. Right. I know you're going, I've never heard of that. You're a super geek. And I programmed it in BASIC to like have a dot travel across the screen. Right. And it took me forever. And then I showed my brother, and he was like, okay, run it. And I did it. And he was like, he just like threw his hands up and went, oh! And he ran out. That's all it does.
That's it. That's all you get. Yes, right. That was the reward. That was totally that, and that's, I spent a lot of time in Germany doing that with a Commodore VIC 20.
I had a Commodore VIC 20 in basic.
Got it. Yeah. Yep, exactly. Totally. All day long. And this is back, for those of you who don't remember, back when we had things like tape to and that's what you saved
the
things on
tape,
because we didn't really have, we didn't really have that hard drive thing going down. We had 512K of RAM, and we thought we were styling. That was like the thing. I mean, now you've got, 512K of RAM inside a baby bottle, I'm sure, somewhere. There's an electronic thing. You know, it's just nuts. But, yeah, and then I would get those magazines to copy the source code for programs and then debug them. That was fun activity. You know, this is why Jay doesn't know how to hang a picture, is because I sat in front of my computer typing those things in, making them work. It is what it is. The point is where you start isn't where you stay. You can grow.
There you go. And this has been awesome, Jay. You're a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Let's do this again. Well, I'm going to bookmark you 6 months to a year down the road. I'm giving you a call.
No, there it is. I, Lord willing, I will still be here.
You will. All right, sir. Have a good day.
All right.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for taking the time to ride along with us on another episode of Vroom Vroom Veer. For podcast info and show notes, be sure to head over to vvveer.com. That's VVVER.com. Man, that's fun to say. And we'll catch up with you next time here on Vroom Vroom Veer.